Welcome to the Casey Kohar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have as my guest for the first time today, Lisa Lutz. We'll be discussing The Trail of the Spellmans, which has recently been published by Simon & Schuster in hardcover. And first of all, Lisa, thank you so much for taking time out of what I'm sure is about to become a very busy schedule.
Oh, you're welcome. Right now it's not busy, so it's all cool.
Good, good. Now, The Trail of the Spellmans is document number 5, and when I've told friends about your books in the past, I tell them that they're very humorous, and but they're very good mysteries as well. And one of the things I'm always intrigued with, when you decided to write humor, did you realize what you were getting into when you started that?
Well, it took me many years to figure out that what I should be was a comedic writer. So, you know, when I started with screenplays, they weren't necessarily comedies, and it was always sort of like I noticed that I couldn't let go of a joke. So if I found a joke, I had to use it, even if it was sort of inappropriate for the scene. And over time, I just came to accept that this was the thing that appealed to me most. And I always think that comedy is this really great way to talk about more serious issues. It makes sort of anything palatable. But it is a lot of work, because once you set out to write it's like you can write one book that's funny, and maybe it's an accident on some level. Like, some jokes just seem, you don't know where they come from. You can't necessarily you can't write again and again and again and always find the joke. Whereas I think you can always fix the story, the plot, other things, the pacing. But a joke, sometimes you'll never find it. So that's the scary part. Every time I write something that I think is funny, I also think it might be the last time I ever think of anything funny.
Well, I admire writers that write with humor, because what I find as a reader and also as a teacher is that readers are afraid to laugh at the wrong time in a book, I think.
I'm not sure about like that in terms of reading, but in public, it's sort of like, I think people are sometimes afraid to laugh. Mm-hmm. If you're in a movie theater, it's always like there's one person laughing first, and then somebody follows, I think.
Right, right, right. And I think it takes a skill that is probably undervalued or underappreciated at times by readers. But I read enough books to where I appreciate it and respect that. Because I think it shows a very sophisticated level of writing that takes courage to write. Now, and one of the other things from the first time they sent me your first book, The Spellman Files, you have a very interesting way of you use footnotes in your documents, you have appendixes, and you kind of throw traditional structure to the wind, which I admire as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, when I first wrote a novel, The Spellman Files was my first novel, and I had come from screenplays, which have a very strict structure, and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, but I figured the only thing I could do is write something as entertaining as I could, which meant figuring out the best way I could tell a story, which isn't necessarily the best way the story could be told. And so that's when I ended up using transcripts and footnotes, and I just freed myself up for anything. And I figured as long as it wasn't boring, I did my job.
And do you assume that readers are going to look at the footnotes when you use them, or do you think maybe half the people will look at it and half of them won't?
I think that most people look at them, and then maybe 20% of the people are mad that they have to look at them. But they're still looking at them because they write me and tell me they're mad about it.
I was wondering about that, because I found myself at times saying, okay, no more footnotes for me. And then I would get 3 or 4 pages on and I would look down and I would say, she got me again. And then there's one that we won't give away with one of the characters a person who you refer to quite frequently in the book, and you have what I thought was one of the funniest parts of the book was when you say, this, I promise this is the last time, and I got a good belly laugh out of that one. I thought that was great.
Thank you. I was quite pleased with myself too.
Lisa, and I must admit that the when I didn't look at the appendix, okay, because I've read, you know, read the other books, but afterwards when I read the appendix, it was very interesting to see how Izzy does, how she perceives the habits, the good and bad habits of other people. That was very entertaining for me.
Yeah, it's not an objective appendix. It's from Isabel's point of view.
Yeah, from her point of view, which is very interesting. But I don't want people to think that this book is just all comedy, because it's not. There are actually some very serious and touching plot developments that you go through. So if you would, for the listeners, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the Trail of the Spellmans? There are three different cases that the Spellman family is working on, and what was kind of your goal as you started out with this with Trail of the Spellmans?
Well, I was interested in writing obviously continuing the evolution of the family. So for people who haven't read any of the books, you know, the characters age in what is almost real time. So the first book came out in 2007, and Isabel was 28, and now she's 34. I'm not sure if the math is exact, but it's pretty close. So I wanted to continue the family story and Isabel's story, but I did, with this book, I wanted to write a sort of a surveillance-focused book, but also about, like, how the different members of the family, the ones involved in the private investigative business, perceive their job, whereas the parents sort of look at it as like, this is business, and they'll accept any job, and if a client asks you to surveil someone, you don't really ask too many questions, you simply provide the report, whereas Isabel looks beyond that. So there are three cases. One is some parents hire Spellman Investigations to follow their co-ed daughter, and they don't really explain why, other than the daughter, they want to make sure that the daughter isn't getting into any trouble. A woman hires them to follow her husband, and in that case, we don't have any reason why she would want to follow the husband, because he isn't doing anything wrong. And then a brother hires them to follow his sister, once again, for reasons that are not quite clear. And then, on some level, there's a client who actually hires them to sort of surveil him, well, his apartment. And those are the cases on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
There's no murder or anything like that.
And I think I found the second thread. That was the one that really kind of, I guess, got me more in the end. Because I think as a society, we watch so many crime dramas now that we come to books with certain assumptions that things are happening. And I really liked what you did with that plot development.
Which one are we talking about? I lost track.
The one with the wife that hires the husband to be trailed.
Oh, right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I really liked the what you did with that as the book developed. You know, when we find out, you know, the reasons behind that, I thought that was you know, very touching, and I was surprised, you know, by that.
Thank you. You know, there are many things in this book where they started out a certain way and then they just changed completely. I think this book was revised as I went along much more than any of the other books.
And I would imagine that I would imagine your editor has to be helpful in a book like this, where you're taking twists and turns and, you know, kind of keeping you, you know, on track as well. Have you worked with the same editor on the last few books?
Yeah, basically. I mean, the first four was the same editor, and then I did have a new one, but I've also had the same readers all along. So, I mean, I do get many, many reads when I write these, because it's also a matter of, I have to keep in mind, can the book stand alone? How much information do I need to give? And that I no longer have any sense of. So it absolutely requires an outside observer saying,
I would say that this book, The Trail of the Spellmans, I would say this is a standalone. I think a person could come to this and read this. Now, they might have to consult the appendix, but I do feel this is a book that I would feel very comfortable saying to someone, you can pick up Trail of the Spellmans and read this, and you don't have to have read the other books in the series. And that is tricky when you are writing a series.
Especially this one, which is so based on the family dynamic, but that's good to know.
Yeah, and there's really a kind of a I don't know if I would call it a tender love story, but there's a love interest that involves Gertie and And Bernie,
are you giving it away?
We won't say a love interest, but a relationship, a friendship that develops that I got a real kick out of as well.
Oh, okay. That's good. I'm glad. I enjoyed that character a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. When you started down the road with Izzy, with Trail of the Spellmans, could you have imagined that you would be doing document number 5 now and achieving the level of success and readership you're beginning to that you've attracted with the Spellmans?
No, I mean it's still, you know, there really are days where I just sort of, it's almost like I snap out of a fog and I realize, you know, how much different my life is than it was, you know, when I was, you know, just writing the first book and just sort of assuming that it wouldn't get published, but mm-hmm. trying it anyway. And, you know, when I wrote the Spellman Files, I didn't envision it as a series at all. They just said, can you write a sequel? And I had been revising the book for so long and the characters were so alive in my head that I had already seen a future for them, even though I had no intention of writing about them. I mean, I think anytime okay. you finish a book, you should see where the characters are going, even if you don't plan on writing it. But in this case, they were so full of life to me that it was easy for me to say, oh, yeah, I can write a second book, and then
okay.
another one.
Lisa, one of my favorite characters in this book is David Spellman.
Okay.
And if you would, talk a little bit about the evolution of David Spellman in this book, and just his bad habits are very interesting, but he has changed a lot in this book. And if you would, what was the motivation, or how, what did you draw upon to come up with David? Because I know a lot of, being a teacher, I know a lot of people like David Spellman.
Well, David started out in the series as sort of the perfect older brother, a kind of a slightly slick but moral attorney who's very handsome and everything's sort of perfect about him, and he was the counterpoint to Isabel for many years. And now he's a stay-at-home dad, and he's fully embraced fatherhood in every way imaginable, and he's very, very obsessed with his daughter, Sydney, and is no longer obsessed with sort of his looks or the job he had or anything else. And so that's his major evolution. And for Isabel, it's just such a striking contrast. She doesn't quite know what to make of it.
Yeah, that's a kind of a modern phenomena, I think, of the helicopter father,
right.
like he is. And like I say, being a teacher, you got that very, very. That's very accurate. The competition for getting kids in preschools and everything is actually pretty intense these days, which is from the days of when I was raised. I'm 54. When I was raised, my parents were just glad I was home, you know, when they turned the lights off in my room at night. It's changed a lot since then.
I know. I am completely unfamiliar with that phenomenon. I mean, I had cousins, younger cousins, who were sort of carted around to lesson after lesson after lesson. But, you know, I had a key and I watched a lot of TV, so I don't relate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lisa, when you received the nomination for the Edgar Award, was that a boost for you in terms of being able to continue on with the series? Was that meaningful in the development of your career?
You know what, the Edgar Awards are very important just in the crime writing community, but they have little influence on sales.
Okay.
So it didn't help my career at all. And it was a hilarious thing that happened because it was, you know, a book like mine is almost never nominated for the Edgar.
I would agree, yes.
Yeah, never. But I don't think in the history of the Edgars has a book without a murder been nominated. And I could just see the sort of collective eye-rolling in the blogosphere when my name and my book was announced. And, you know, the book, Curse of the Spellmans, is considered the worst in the series. So we all found it hilarious. I mean, I don't think it's the worst, but the whole thing was so, so funny to me. And when we were at the Edgar ceremony, they were, like, blasting pictures of the books on the screen, and all the other books look so serious, and then there's this, like, light blue eyeball thingy you know, with my husband.
Well, I must say I love the dust jacket portrayal of the Spellmans. I think it's I really like this dust jacket. I think it's very.
Oh, it's great. They redesigned the entire backlist, and I'm really thrilled with it. I think it was a really smart move, because I personally would have never bought the previous jackets if I had seen them with someone else's name on them. Of course, if my name was on them, I'd probably buy them out of curiosity.
Of course. Lisa, one of the things that I think probably one of the most compelling characters in Trail of the Spellmans, document number 5, is Demetrius Merriweather. And if you would, I was very interested in Demetrius. He adds a richness to the Spellman family, to put it mildly. And you do have a little bit in the appendix about Demetrius. So if you would, tell me a little bit about Demetrius Merriweather and his role in this novel.
Sure. Well, Demetrius now works at Spellman Investigations, but in document 4, which is called The Spellman Strike Again, I think, in document 4, Demetrius was wrongly incarcerated for a crime he didn't commit, and Ray and Isabel work to get him out of prison. And, you know, unlike many cases of that nature, they succeed, because it's fiction, and he becomes basically an honorary member of the Spellman family. But like any member of the Spellman family, everybody is sort of curious about his behavior, and so they know he's up to something, and they're sort of invading his privacy, which is really, and he's not doing anything wrong, of course, which is often the case, but and he tries to mediate with the family and help them survive each other. And he befriends a character that he really shouldn't befriend, the grandmother, Grammy Spellman.
Grammy Spellman.
Who's evil, and, I think.
And Grammy forces Mrs. Spellman to, she kind of goes on a trail of self-improvement that I thought was pretty comical as well.
Yeah, well, Olivia, the mother, would do just about anything to get out of the house and not spend time with Grammy, so that's how that happens.
Now, Lisa, now that the Trail of the Spellmans, that this is out and is in the bookstores, looking back, what are you happiest about as a writer with the craft that you accomplished in this novel? That perhaps you feel in the others that you did well, but maybe you've done better in Trail of the Spellmans.
Well, I did like how I integrated certain cases. I also, with this book, was able to create story threads that I can continue on with later books, which makes it a little bit easier when I'm writing, and have new characters that can live on. You know, it's really hard to say what I've done in one book over the other that's better, because it's one hopes as a writer that you're getting better, but it's one of those things where, like aging, you don't see it happening minute by minute. You just hope it is.
Do you are you glad now that you have continued the series, that you've followed the Spellmans down the trail that they're on? I've been interviewing mystery writers and detective writers and political writers and reading them for 30 years, and it seems that the really successful writers eventually settle into some kind of a series and then write other books as well, you know, that they feel compelled to write. But it seems that writing a series is probably one of the best ways to attract and maintain a readership.
Yes, I mean, I think that early on when I was naive, I thought, oh, I can just write 3 books in the Spellman series, and then I can write whatever I want, and people will immediately read it, which was not the case. And I learned that lesson with Heads You Lose, which came out last year. But it's not going to stop me from writing other books. After this one, I'm writing a standalone novel called You Were Here, which isn't a crime or comedic specifically. But, you know, the series gives you the opportunity to, you know, build your audience. And I think that as long as you have integrity about it, it's okay. And I love the challenge of the series. It's like, I don't have, sensational crimes to hang the books on. And so with each book, I have to figure out, okay, how can I make this interesting when I'm dealing with something that's sort of, that's ultimately domestic?
Mm-hmm.
And I am very happy. I have to, just one thing I want to say. I am very happy with, there is a, I won't say why, but there's an excerpt of a picture book in Trail of the Spellmans, illustrated by this really great upcoming illustrator named Jamie Temerick. That's, I'm very excited about.
Good.
And there will be a children's book accompanying it next year.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you know, I like the fact that you're thinking the way you are, because, you know, I look at writers like James Lee Burke and Michael Conley and some of the, you know, major mystery writers, and they write the series, but they also write, you know, their standalones. And when I interview them, those are always their favorite books. And so I think that that you know, you're to be commended for doing that, rather than just taking the really what would be the easier way to just write Spellman novels. And so I think that's to be commended.
Thank you. I think most of us, I mean, most writers who really care what they're doing, they don't want to just write a series.
Right. And then one thing I'd like to talk about before we wrap up is, when I was reading the acknowledgments, and I'm one of those readers, I read a book from cover to cover and the whole thing. And let's just talk for a moment, and because I have a lot of listeners to the show that are either aspiring writers or writers or avid readers that are concerned about the future of the book, and I really like, you know, the appendix and the acknowledgments, you know, are humorous, and there's some funny things in there. But then you say, since I've got some extra space here, I want to at least touch on the changes in the book world. And if you would, how, as a person that's in the phase of your career that you're in, what's the landscape for you like right now, where we basically have Barnes & Noble as one of the few bricks and mortar stores now? We have the evolution of e-books. And you say you don't see the end of days being here. I don't either. That's why I do these interviews, to help authors and to promote literature. How are you? How do you see the landscape evolving right now?
Well, it is. I mean, it doesn't look great, but I think that as long as people sort of, as long as authors and readers who care and booksellers sort of get out there and shout, you know, as much as they can, and sort of remind people, when they're only clicking to buy a book, they're, you know, eradicating maybe an industry. I think that there's a chance we can keep the real book alive, and there's a good reason for it. People seem to think that an electronic file that you get for a book should cost only a few dollars, but they don't seem to understand that it ultimately diminishes the quality of what you're reading. The cost of actually printing a book is never more than like $4 per book. So if a book is, even if we're talking about a paperback that retails for $14, you know, the ebook should be $10. And people don't seem to understand that. And they're finding bargains from all the e-published authors out there. But I can guarantee those books aren't as good. The people who are in charge of publishing, which unpublished writers like to call the gatekeepers, they're gatekeepers for a reason. They're keeping out all the crap.
Exactly.
And a book is not a bargain if it's not good.
Right. And I have a class full of students right now, and they would laugh when I say this, but I make them smell books. When I hand out a new book to read, I make them open, crack the spine, and smell it. And you can't do that with a Kindle. And but I think that's my biggest fear, and the reason that I continue to do my website and you know, do these interviews and don't make any money at it, is that ultimately how does the reading audience know if a book is any good if there are not editors and agents involved in the publishing process? What's to keep people from just the whole industry turning into a self-publishing vanity system where there's no, and I hate to use the word gatekeeper, but it is accurate, no one saying, you know what, this is not good enough to publish.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, and I hope people come around and see that.
And I know Ann Patchett has started a bookstore in Nashville, and I'm hoping that maybe those of us that love the book, maybe we'll start seeing the rise again of some independent bookstores, and booksellers. But the public has to be willing to pay some kind of a price for a book, or books will go the way of the DVD and the CD.
I know, which is terrifying because, authors can't make money touring.
No. And I know you're embarking on a tour here shortly.
Yes.
And that's becoming even harder and harder to do,
I know it's very rare, but for whatever reason, we're still doing it with me, and we'll see how much longer it lasts.
Yeah, good. Well, Lisa, I really appreciate your time today. I highly recommend the Spellman series to listeners, and I will tell you that Simon & Schuster has done a great job. Just so you know, they've done a great job getting your books in my hands and sending me emails saying, Casey, I think you really would enjoy Lisa Lutz and her books. So they've been a major proponent for you. And, so I always like to give recognition to the publicists who get books in my hands because that's the way I find out, and now what's nice is that people can pick up a Lisa Lutz book now, they can read Trail of the Spellmans, and then they can go back and they have four other books to read.
Yeah, no. It's,
which is really what readers love.
Exactly. No, it's been great. I have a very good team that I have a debt to.
Well, my guest today has been Lisa Lutz. We've been discussing Trail of the Spellmans, published by Simon & Schuster. I strongly recommend this. And one thing I hate, Lisa, and I've resisted the urge. Everyone always asks me, well, who does she write like? Everyone wants to pigeonhole series writers into, well, she writes like X or she writes like Y. And the only thing I'll tell people is that I think you write books that people that read a lot of very popular female authors write, and yours are written with more intelligence.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, I hate the comparisons myself. So.
And I would not belittle you with that, nor would I want to make any enemies with who I would compare you to. So, but I say it's like X with brains. So,
thank you.
And since I don't get paid to do this, I can say that. So
that's great. That should be like my blurb on the back.
That should be your blurb. It's like X or Y with brains.
Thank you.
And she writes them herself. So, well, Lisa, it's been a pleasure. I wish you the best of luck with Trail of the Spellmans, and I hope that I'll tell you what, when your next book comes out, The Standalone comes out, I'll have you back on, and we can talk about that.
Thanks so much, Casey. It's been great.
Great. Okay, Lisa, good luck to you.
Thank you.